I'm Graham Smith. We established the Mothers Program to provide a reliable source of information about pregnancy on the internet with the goal to improve mothers' health through education, research, and screening. The Mothers Podcasts are an extension of that. Today we're going to be discussing diabetes and pregnancy. Our guest is my close colleague, Dr. Laura Gaudet. Dr. Gaudet is an associate professor and clinician scientist in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Queen's University in the Kingston Health Sciences Center, where she is a maternal fetal medicine specialist, which includes running the Diabetes and Pregnancy Clinic. Laura, welcome and thank you for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me, Graham.
When we talk about diabetes and pregnancy, we're including diabetes that exists before pregnancy, but also those pregnant individuals who develop or are diagnosed with gestational diabetes. Can you give us a bit of a background on the different types?
I think most people know there's three main types of diabetes. You've probably heard of type 1, type 2, and gestational diabetes. So first, most people with type 1 diabetes are diagnosed before about the age of 25. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune condition in which the body accidentally destroys its own pancreas. The pancreas is the organ in our body that makes insulin, so people with type 1 diabetes can't make insulin of their own. People get very sick when they're diagnosed and seek care really quickly. But once they're diagnosed, they rely on insulin injections or insulin infusions for the rest of their lives. Type 2 diabetes, on the other hand, can be diagnosed at any age. Most people are adults, even older adults, but there are some children and some people of reproductive age who are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes as well. People with type 2 diabetes can still make their own insulin, but their bodies don't react to it the same way that people without type 2 diabetes do. They're kind of resistant to the effects of insulin, so it doesn't work well, and they also develop high blood sugars. There's several risk factors for type 2 diabetes. People usually are aware of things like older age, higher body weight, and family history, for example. Type 2 diabetes, as opposed to type 1 diabetes, is usually treated first with modifications to diet and exercise, and then taking pills by mouth and adding insulin as needed. For gestational diabetes is a little bit different. So that diagnosis is only given to people who didn't have diabetes prior to their pregnancy. And we usually don't call it gestational diabetes unless it's diagnosed after 20 weeks or so. During the pregnancy, the body becomes more resistant to insulin so that there's smooth transfer of sugar in the form of glucose to the developing baby. The placenta makes hormones that make that process occur. So we know if people are at high risk for abnormal blood sugars, the placenta hormones cause outright high blood sugars or another form of diabetes. The risk factors for gestational diabetes are the same as those for type 2 diabetes. And we know that people who have true gestational diabetes, the condition goes away at least temporarily once that placenta is delivered.
So what are the risks associated with diabetes and pregnancy? And are there ways to reduce both the risks to the mother and the baby?
When it comes to risk, we think about risks that the diabetes places on the pregnancy, those that the pregnancy places on the diabetes, and those that the medications we use present. So for people who have diabetes prior to pregnancy, either type 1 or type 2, there's an increased risk of miscarriage and of birth defects. And those birth defects usually involve either the spine or the heart. We know the risk is directly related to the person's blood sugar control in very early pregnancy. So the better the blood sugars are controlled, the lower the risk. After we get past the first trimester, and this is true for type 1, type 2, and gestational diabetes, we know there's several complications for mom and baby, including things like overgrowth of the baby, where the baby gets bigger than it should be. Although there are a few moms with long-term diabetes who are actually at risk of growth restriction. But we also see more maternal preeclampsia and we see more stillbirth. The babies themselves are more likely to have low blood sugars, need to be admitted to a neonatal intensive care unit or a NICU, and they might need treatment for jaundice more than a mom who doesn't have diabetes. We know that in pregnancy, the blood sugars are always harder to control, and that's true for any type of diabetes. So we often find ourselves having to increase the dose of medications like insulin to control the blood sugars. We sometimes have patients who've had diabetes for a long time, and especially if the blood sugars have not been well controlled, those patients can develop organ damage, things like kidney disease or eye problems. And for those people, pregnancy can worsen their other related medical problems, which can have some pretty serious lifelong effects for them. Finally, I would say not all medications taken by people with diabetes are safe in pregnancy, so it's really important that they talk to their doctor to decide which ones are right for them. Now, almost all of those complications that I mentioned, Graham, are reduced by achieving excellent blood sugar control in pregnancy, ideally with the support of a multidisciplinary team. We know it's really important that people take a multivitamin prior to pregnancy for at least 3 months and through the first trimester. Usually a regular multivitamin is enough, but for some patients, they might need some extra folic acid as well. So they should certainly talk to their doctors about that too.
For anyone who has a medical condition, the best time to get pregnant is when their medical condition is well controlled, and really none more so than diabetes. Based on what you're saying, I guess the recommendation that anyone with diabetes should be seen for pre-pregnancy counseling to discuss timing of pregnancy and management. Is that true?
As we were saying a moment ago, it takes a whole team of people to help manage diabetes. We need those blood sugars to be well controlled from the time of conception to ensure the healthiest outcome possible. So in a perfect world, every person with diabetes would meet with the team, take the time to optimize their blood sugars going into the pregnancy. More than that, if we see them before the pregnancy, we get the chance to evaluate the effect of diabetes on the patient's entire body, letting us look for and treat related conditions like eye and kidney disease even before the pregnancy occurs. We know even people who don't have diabetes benefit from pre-pregnancy assessment. They can look for things like risk factors for gestational diabetes, some of which can be modified before pregnancy, diet, physical activity, and maybe even body weight to some extent. So no, pre-pregnancy visits are very important.
So apart from good sugar control prior to pregnancy, you mentioned folic acid. Is there anything else that they should really be doing? For instance, should they be taking higher dose folic acid, not just the 1 milligram that's in a normal prenatal vitamin?
Well, I think, first of all, Graham, you and I agree that all people, but especially those planning a pregnancy, should be working towards their best health. We all need to be getting a minimum of 150 minutes of moderately vigorous physical activity every week. We should all be following Canada's food guide, minimizing our processed foods and eating a colorful array of fruits and vegetables as the foundation of our diet. We also spend quite a bit of time talking about the glycemic index diet when we're talking to patients about healthy eating. I do think anybody planning a pregnancy should be taking that multivitamin for at least 3 months. If a patient has previously had a baby with a birth defect or if her diabetes is particularly poorly controlled, then the increased level of folic acid might be important. Finally, I encourage both men and women who are planning pregnancies to stay away from things like alcohol and smoking and substance use. They want to de-stress their lives as much as possible going into a pregnancy and make sure that they're getting good sleep hygiene. This is the time in life where people really should be taking the very best care of themselves that they can.
The Canadian recommendation and that of the WHO, the World Health Organization, is that all pregnant individuals should be offered screening for gestational diabetes. In Canada, screening typically occurs between 24 and 28 weeks, involves consuming a 50-gram glucose solution with blood work 1 hour later. They don't have to be fasted for it, but nothing to eat or drink at least 1 hour beforehand. In about 15% of individuals, that test comes back positive, and they go on to do a more formal overnight fasted 75-gram oral glucose tolerance test with blood testing immediately before the drink, then again at 1 hour and 2 hours afterwards. In the end, gestational diabetes affects about 5% of all pregnant women. Are there other ways to screen? I know that there have been some changes or recommendations because of the pandemic.
Now, that's right, Graham. What you described is the current recommended screening process. And admittedly, it's a little bit onerous, but it's the most effective one we have to date. So that's what most patients are going to be doing. I do occasionally see patients who aren't able to complete the standard screening. There's a few reasons that might be. Some patients are just unable to tolerate the drink, especially if they have significant nausea and vomiting. Our bariatric surgery patients should not undergo the typical screening process. And so for those patients, there's a couple of different ways that you can still be screened. The most common probably is measuring a fasting blood glucose, as well as something called a hemoglobin A1C, which is a measure of longer-term sugar control. Another strategy I've sometimes used is to send patients home with an actual glucose monitor, and I have them monitor their sugars 4 times a day for a week and bring those back to me. And if they're normal, that's great, but if not, then they're diagnosed that way. you're right. At the beginning of the pandemic, when we were trying to keep people out of the hospital as much as possible, or certainly at home as much as possible, and we did adopt that screening process that involves an A1C and a fasting glucose, we are back to our more standard screening methods for most patients right now.
Instead of screening everybody, what about screening based on risk factors, such as, you mentioned, family history, weight, previous gestational diabetes, that kind of thing?
I do think it's important to screen everyone for risk factors. If a person has multiple risk factors, or sometimes even just one, I might opt to test them early in pregnancy as well, first trimester, for example. What we're looking for there is undiagnosed type 2 diabetes mostly. We know that only 1 out of 3 patients who are diagnosed with gestational diabetes have traditional risk factors. And so it's just not reliable to rely on risk factors to decide who you're going to test and who you're not going to test.
I assume when you talk about doing earlier screening, if the screening test came back negative, that you would repeat it later on?
So if they pass it in the first trimester, we repeat it between 24 and 28 weeks. I do usually steer them a bit more to 28 weeks if they've had a normal test early in the pregnancy. And then there's a few patients where I get them to do a late test as well. If I report an ultrasound scan where the baby's looking really big and there's extra fluid there, I worry that we might have missed the diagnosis, which does occasionally occur. So there are occasions where a patient might be asked to do a late glucose test as well.
So when someone with a diagnosis of gestational diabetes is referred to the Diabetes and Pregnancy Clinic for the first time, who do they see and what can they expect at their visit?
So our obstetrical diabetes clinic follows all patients with type 1 and type 2 diabetes in pregnancy from the region. For gestational diabetes, we recommend they all come for a consult visit with our team. And that team includes doctors who specialize in diabetes called endocrinologists, dietitians, and nurse educators. And then there's a specialist in complex pregnancies there as well. Usually that's me. At the first visit, people see all 4 team members and they get a thorough evaluation and some education about gestational diabetes. We teach people the gestational diabetes diet and exercise recommendations. We provide them with a glucose monitor that they take home with them to monitor their blood sugars for a week before coming back to show the endocrinologist their results. Following that initial visit, patients with gestational diabetes do go back to their original maternity care provider, whether that was a midwife, a family doctor, or an obstetrician. But often the endocrinology team continues to follow to support the blood sugars. Sometimes if treatment is needed, treatment like insulin, the care might be transferred to a general obstetrician for the remainder of the pregnancy.
How are mom and the baby monitored for the rest of pregnancy?
Well, with gestational diabetes, they're diagnosed between 24 and 28 weeks. So it's getting a bit later in the pregnancy. We typically see the patients every 2 weeks until 34 weeks, and then every week until delivery. For people who are using insulin or oral medications, there's some extra ultrasounds that they do every week from 34 weeks until delivery. And during that time, the patients are monitoring their blood sugars and we're adjusting modifications to treatment as needed.
Are there recommendations for timing of delivery?
Recently, there's been some pretty clear guidance from our national bodies on timing of delivery. So women with gestational diabetes that is well controlled with diet and exercise are advised to deliver at 40 weeks, which is their due date. If people are on treatment like insulin or some of the oral medications, we recommend delivery during the 38th week at some point. And some of our patients with serious complications may need to be delivered earlier, hopefully after 36 weeks, but 36 or 37 weeks does sometimes occur.
You mentioned that the placental hormones impact on glucose control in the mother. What happens to people with either diabetes before pregnancy or those with gestational diabetes after the baby's born and the placenta is delivered?
Well, people with gestational diabetes are usually able to stop all treatment and monitoring almost as soon as they deliver. Remember, we have to increase medication doses during pregnancy for people with type 1 and type 2 diabetes. So those patients, when their placenta delivers, they have to drop right back to their pre-pregnancy dosing. It's a really striking change, and patients need to be aware that they will see that as soon as they deliver.
So what kind of monitoring of the baby should parents expect immediately after delivery if they've had any form of diabetes during pregnancy?
So all of our babies receive normal newborn care. Patients can expect to hold their babies, to be able to breastfeed them, and to get to know them. Many babies whose moms have diabetes in pregnancies have some issues with low blood sugars after they're born. So that early feeding is really important. We do have a policy where we monitor the baby's blood sugars, and that's usually done through heel pricks to make sure that the baby doesn't have dangerously low blood sugars. If they do, they usually respond really well to supplementation. For some babies, breast milk is enough, especially if the mom can bring pre-expressed breast milk, although formula and oral glucose will work very well too. If the baby doesn't respond to those oral treatments, then they may require NICU admission for IV treatment. But we try to make really sure that doesn't happen very often.
We know that pregnancy is essentially a stress test. And for those individuals who have gestational diabetes, essentially failed the stress test, a third of them will go on to develop type 2 diabetes at some point after delivery. As such, Diabetes Canada does recommend doing the 75-gram oral glucose tolerance test within the first 6 months of delivery, and then annually doing a hemoglobin A1C. Many of these women get referred to my maternal health clinic, and I tell them that the reminder for getting this test done should be the birthday of that child. Individuals who have had gestational diabetes in one pregnancy are at increased risk having it again. What are the recommendations for testing in the next pregnancy?
Well, I completely agree with those recommendations, Graham. If people follow them, we can be confident that type 2 diabetes has not developed during the interval between the pregnancies. If it has, pre-pregnancy optimization is so valuable. I usually do an A1C with the first trimester labs for any people with a history of gestational diabetes. And if that's normal, I encourage them to make those positive lifestyle choices about diet and exercise, and then to do their usual glucose testing at the standard time. I offer them the skipping the 50-gram glucose challenge test and going straight to the 75-gram test. It saves time in making the diagnosis, and it's a more sensitive test than the 50 grams. So that's one change I make for people who've had it before.
If they still have their glucometer, what about just getting them starting to do testing periodically, like doing fasting in the morning or recording after an hour after meals?
Yeah, they can for sure do that. I would get them to do the same routine we usually do, which is a fasting every single morning, and then 1 hour after meals, each of the major meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. If they still have it and they have the test strips and can do that, that's another acceptable way to go.
Any final thoughts or advice that you want to give to individuals with diabetes prior to pregnancy or in terms of screening for gestational diabetes?
I always try to remind people that diabetes in pregnancy is so very common. Now affects about 1 in 6 pregnancies worldwide. I think there's a lot of guilt around this diagnosis. So I think it's important that we reassure people that many factors are out of their control. We can't control our family history or our ethnic background, for example. And then I let them know that they can rest a little bit easier knowing that they don't have to manage this alone. There's a whole team of experts waiting to help them through the process. With proper attention and proper treatment, the health of both mother and baby, short and long term, can be ensured. So I just try to take that minute to reassure people that they're not alone in this and we're here to help.
Thank you, Laura, for taking the time to join us to discuss diabetes and pregnancy. I want to thank our guest as well as Adelaide Burrows, who helped to produce this podcast, and for those behind the scenes. We're planning on doing podcasts soon with a diabetic educator and a diabetic dietitian. We will put links to more information on this and other topics on our website, www.themothersprogram.ca. The Mothers Program is all one word. If you have any comments, suggestions, or ideas for topics or people that we should interview, please use the contact section of our website. Until then, I'm Graham Smith. Be safe.